Hey everyone, Brian from All Day Rock Off here, and today's podcast episode is with Alex, who recently completed GOREC selection in class 021. I'm really excited to have him on for this episode. I was a little nervous when I reached out to him, because if you're listening and you weren't aware, GOREC selection class 021 was his first GOREC event. He didn't know about the podcast, and so I crossed my fingers that he would be willing to spend some time to talk with me on the phone, get this interview together, and we had a ton of fun. I'm really, really glad it worked out. There's tons of training tips in this thing, great stories. I really, really think that you're going to enjoy this episode. Alex changed up his entire diet. He changed up his training. He took note of a lot of things that he did when he was training for this event, and he's actually putting together some GOREC training plans, which I'm excited to see. Excited to possibly have him back on to talk about. I really hope you enjoy this episode with Alex. You're listening to the All Day Rock Off podcast, episode number 128. Thank you so much for downloading this episode. Thank you so much for all the support. Truly, truly appreciated. Links, as always, to everything we talked about during the episode can be found in the show notes, alldayrockoff.com/128. And within that, there's also links to his new training website where he's got his training plans up there, as well as links to GOREC selection, the live coverage, all that good stuff. If you want to know where you can find his training plans, they're at ruckingfit.com. And here is the interview with Alex.
It was definitely a bit of a shock. I kind of had what I thought was an idea going in. And from the very start, I knew I was way off and that I was feeling bulletproof. And like my training could not have been more perfect. Through the entire thing, I felt fantastic. My body held up, my joints, muscle, every endurance, everything felt fantastic. I could have kept going. Kind of tweaked my knee at the end, but other than that, I felt fantastic. However, the preparation that I could tell that my other two finishers had done was substantially better than mine. And everything I was doing was just wrong. And I thought I was so smart going into it. And I was an idiot. I would have changed a ton of stuff. Training wise, wouldn't have changed literally anything, but preparation-wise, I would have changed basically everything. But going in and feeling as fit as I felt from my training, I never thought about quitting ever. It never even crossed my mind. I felt good. So all the mistakes I was making, if I went into it, you know, at 20% less confidence in my training, I probably would have thought about it. It would have hurt a lot more, the mistakes I had made. But they didn't hurt me as bad because I felt so good. When they're happening, I'm like, wow, this was a dumb mistake. Oh, well. And just kind of kept going. They didn't really slow me down. They just mentally, I just felt like an idiot. But that's not going to stop you.
Yeah. I'm sure at certain points, everyone feels like an idiot, especially during that kind of event. So it's, you know, it's probably nothing new. So what was your physical training like? I mean, leading up to the event, because I mean, you were a strong performer the entire time in the live feed. Like you just said, you felt like you could have kept going had it not been for your knee. So I'm curious what your weekly training looked like.
Yeah. So I've been writing training programs for different athletes in different sports for a long time. This was nothing different. I kind of sat down in February of last year, I stumbled on GOREC selection and signed up right away. And the next week, I had 9 months of programming done. I just kind of burned the midnight oil and kind of just knocked it out in about 3 days. So I had 9 months of my programming and different cycles and different phases. The first 3 months was rucking, very minimal, running, very minimal, a lot of strongman type training, trying to build hip strength, lateral stability in my ankles and knees. A lot of just real hypertrophy, so a lot of heavy weight, high rep training, just to get overall, improve my connective tissue, my muscle contraction, just get stronger. And then towards the end of the spring, start of the summer, I started doing more sport-specific training that I had written. So workouts that kind of mirrored what I was doing in the military. So I would bring in and do CrossFit workouts, and I would add in movements, handstand walks and bear crawls, and I'd wear a rucksack for things, and I dialed the weights back, but increased the sport specific geared towards selection. And I started rucking and running regiments. So I was doing one ruck march a week, no ruck running, just ruck marching at a high pace. And I was doing an interval run during the week, so like 1 mile repeats, and I was doing a long run once a week. So three cardio sessions and then CrossFit and weights. And that took me to the end of summer, August about. And then I really started dialing back the weights and doing mostly endurance, more running. Rucking felt good. So I actually changed my programming closer to selection and just stopped rucking because it felt so good that I was like, I'm just going to waste a training day that I could be improving on some of these other mediums. And so I started doing more gymnastics type handstand holds and overhead walking lunges, lots of step ups, lots of unilateral work as selection came closer, and just didn't even put the rucksack on because it felt so good. So modified that towards the end of my training, and man, I felt fantastic. I switched over to a plant-based diet. So I'm 100% vegan starting, it's been a while now, but during the training, I was dealing with inflammation and the high volume and stumbled on like the vegan diet and changed everything. My volume went up. All my times were faster. I started working out more because I felt better. Recovery was faster. Swelling and inflammation was down. So I started digging into anti-inflammatory athlete recovery diets and stumbled upon some Olympic athletes that were plant-based, and thought I'd give it a try. And I was doing the PT test every week. My long run day was my PT test day. So I was doing my push-ups, sit-ups, and then the 5 mile, and was running like 39 flats, like consecutively, just over and over again, was not progressing. Even some days was slowing down. It just wasn't going well. That's when I was like, I'm accumulating too much stress. I need to get rid of this inflammation. I need to recover. So I spun up this plant-based diet and just went cold turkey vegan. And 7 days later, changed nothing except my diet. And I ran a 36:40. So 2 minutes and 20 seconds faster on my 5 mile. And this is after running like 15 5 miles, all about 39 minutes. My fastest was like 38:45, and went vegan for 7 days. The only thing I changed, completely quantifiable, and ran a sub 37, like 36:40, I think. And like, I was awestruck. Average heart rate was 9 beats per minute lower, average through the whole 5 miles. And that was it. Like, 7 days before that was my last bite of meat, and I haven't gone back since. And that was the biggest eye opener, was that training, the muscular endurance that I showed that day after changing nothing, no rest days, nothing was different. Everything was exactly the same except that. And it was over 2 minutes faster. And this is after training for 5 months. This was not like I all of a sudden like hit this great progress. Like, it was my diet, and you couldn't convince me of anything else. And I haven't ran a slower time than that since we ran a 37 flat on the beach in Jacksonville and felt amazing. Probably had like 140 beats per minute average, like just cruised to a great finish. And I credit that completely to the diet. So after that, I wasn't going back. That's for darn sure.
I mean, what else can you attribute it to, right? There must have been some inflammation or something that you didn't even, that you might have realized or didn't realize, but with your plant-based diet, it's all gone, or somewhat gone, because how else are you going to shave that kind of time off?
Yeah, I read they've done a study about how there's a layer that lines your artery and your veins that when your body calls for it, so like in your legs, your body's going to call for more blood. That layer will dilate and allow more blood flow to your muscles. However, in a meat-based diet, the fatty tissue and the oils in the meat paralyze that membrane and won't allow it to dilate. So you struggle. It doesn't constrict it, but it won't dilate it. So you won't get the blood flow that you could be getting on a plant-based diet. I don't know if it's true. later afterwards, I saw it on a documentary called The Game Changers on Netflix. Well, it was on iTunes then, but it's on Netflix now. The Game Changers was, I didn't know what I was getting into, and I saw that, and it started making sense, all the questions I had. Like, why do I feel so good? That documentary is pretty fantastic. It's a good starting point for someone that wants to kind of understand the plant-based diet, how it relates to high-level athletes, because that's what that documentary is all about. Olympic athletes, power lifters, strong men that have gone plant-based and how they feel and how they perform. So that one kind of factoid that I picked up on with that layer, that tissue in your veins and arteries that dilates and allows more blood that gets paralyzed if you're on a meat diet, it works properly on a plant-based diet. And that's how I felt. It made sense that my legs didn't get tired. My heart wasn't pumping as hard, and I wasn't breathing as hard because the parts of my body that needed the blood were getting it, and it felt amazing. That was the only way I could rationalize the way I felt, because I wear a heart rate monitor when I train. So I'm looking at two different 7 days apart, the same 5 miles. Like, how did this happen? Like, I'm looking at my heart rate, my respiratory breathing, my times, my splits. And I'm like, how on earth did I just do that? And the only thing that checked all the boxes was that one kind of side effect of the plant-based diet that just made so much sense to me. And I was like, well, I don't know if it's true, but I'm a pretty logical guy and it's checking the boxes. So, you know, what's that saying? The most easily explainable solution is probably the true one. That's kind of how I was looking at it. We're like, I could come up with 1,000 more complicated reasons why this is happening, but this is the basic one. And I don't have any evidence to argue, so that's what I'm going to go with. And it's gone really well. And this is all like, so my wife and I own D-Town CrossFit, and part of our gym is writing programming and writing nutrition diet. So working with the trainers, I did all this with our team. So we all kind of came together and developed this program and this diet, which was the best thing, because outsourcing that stuff is... It's the best. So I had our lead programmer, Andre Gibbs. He wrote the programming with me, and our nutritionist, Becca Day, real established CrossFit. She took on a team, took fourth at the CrossFit Games a few years ago. So she's a stud. She's knows just a ton about nutrition. So she and I worked together on my diet for it. And I'll tell you, I've been doing a lot of stuff for a long time, but I've never felt more prepared for anything. After the program and the diet that we built, going into that, I was so much confidence.
Man, that's awesome. And I'm just a couple different levels there. You know, a lot of people get training plans, right? And then they go through it and they start feeling this weird nagging if they don't do a day the way exactly it says in the book. Even if it's, you know, like you said, your ruck days towards the end, you're feeling great. So you just switched it up because it felt like you weren't gaining anything that day. So that's, I mean, just being able to have that that ability to flip that over and noticing that, I mean, that's awesome. And it sounds like, you know, all of your experience and work really led you up to making those decisions. And then I'm curious about your diet before you switch to the plant-based diet. I'm guessing you're eating healthy before as well. Like, you're not eating McDonald's every day.
Oh, no. Yeah, absolutely. So I was extremely overweight as a child growing up. That's kind of like, it's just my cross to bear. Like, I will never not have those genes. I just, my body wants to be, has a, just a layer of just nice, soft, fatty tissue everywhere. So I've always kind of ate healthy back and forth, always track my macronutrients. So I know exactly I'm eating 180 grams of protein, 180 grams of carbs, and about 90 grams of fat, no matter what diet I'm on. Those were the macros I used. So I was getting my protein, my carbs, and my fats through a mixture of lean meats, fatty meats, just the paleo diet, basically. No starches, no sugars. Everything I learned through like the CrossFit methodology, that's kind of caveman diet. And then kind of stumbled on the plant-based diet and still hit the same exact number of macros. I still get my 180 grams of protein, 180 grams of carbs, and about 90 grams of fat, depending on my training. So I'm getting ready to start training for team assessment. I just signed up for that. So that looks like a lot of fun. So I'm going to restart this whole process, but I'll be eating more carbohydrates based on my training. Those numbers I threw out, that's a baseline for me. And if I'm trying to lean out, you know, work on body composition, I'll cut my carbohydrates down. And if I'm trying to add muscle and tissue, then I'll add carbohydrates up to, at the low end, 45 to 50 grams of carbs, and the high end, 230, 240, 250 grams of carbs based on what my training looks like. So I'm going to be on the higher end of that here coming up, as team assessment training begins.
That's great that you know what works for you. That's awesome. You know, if there's people who are listening and they don't know what works for them, is there someone that they can look for or try and reach out to kind of mess with those numbers? Or like, what's a good approach for people who are listening to you, getting inspired by, you know, your performance and your diet, and like, what can people do?
Oh, absolutely. And that's a tough starting point for people. You kind of figure it out over time. Like, I know how my body responds to certain macros. So my training based on this amount of food, and I track my weight every day. So I've done it for myself, and I've learned over, you know, 20 years of trying to take care of myself, like what my body kind of needs and wants, depending on my training. People that don't know, that want to cut out the trial and error, there's a lot of services out there. I love our service at D-Town CrossFit. So our nutritionist, Becca Day, she's our point of contact for members and for those that want to have a nutrition coach who assigns you your macros based on your genetics, your age, your activity level, and then follows up and checks in on your progress. Because that's the key, is you follow these macros for 2 weeks, and if you lose 2 pounds in 2 weeks, well, that may be a little too fast. So she's going to adjust your macros. And if you don't lose any weight, then maybe she'll cut a few calories out. And if you gain weight, then, you know, depending on what your activity level is, that's after a couple of months, she's got you dialed in. And our members just love it, because it takes the guesswork out of, I don't even know where do I start? How do I track it? It's just tough to know that without having to live through the trial and error of the months of practice and failure and then discouragement and then having to stay positive. It's just tough. Everyone just wants to start and just have a good, accurate starting point. And that's what we provide. And that's what she specializes in.
That's awesome. So you went vegan diet for training for GORUCK Selection. Are you planning on staying vegan forever, or are you planning on moving back over? You know, do you have a game plan there yet?
Man, that is the question I've been getting more than anything else, is, so you're going to stay vegan? And yeah, absolutely. In the foreseeable future, until I run into a problem or until I stop feeling the best I've ever felt in my life, I am absolutely going to stay 100% vegan. And I went cold turkey. I just didn't. Everyone's like, what resources did you have? I said, honestly, I just stopped eating meat. Like, I just started eating vegan food. That's walk to Whole Foods, and I find the vegan area. Like, there's no one resource. So we've learned a lot, Becca and I, from my experience. So we're applying that to those that want to be a plant-based athlete. But when I did it, I just kind of had the background in knowing my own macros and my own body, and just one day was like, you know what? I'm going to give this a try. And that was the last day I have had meat or any animal product. No cheese, no milk, no yogurt, no anything. And I feel absolutely fantastic.
I'm glad to hear it. And I mean, we all saw it on the video, right? Of you performing out in GORUCK Selection. So it worked for you. Definitely.
Yeah, they had a field day with that. Cadre Mocha, he was giving me all, he was trying to razz me and get me flustered, being, hey, 5'2", I got a burger back in the camp with your name on it. I'll get you a T-bone steak if you quit right now. You know you need it. Your muscles need it. And after like 30 minutes, I was like, Cadre, I don't want to burst your bubble, but I haven't had meat in quite a while. I got no desire to start now. I'm vegan. And he just went ballistic. He was like, you're a plant eater? I'm like, oh, yeah, feeling good. I'm an herbivore. I don't know what to tell you. He didn't know what to say after that.
Yeah, the last 30 minutes to hour of harassing you was just null. It doesn't even register.
But you know what? While they were doing that, all those cadre behind the scenes were contacting every pizzeria in Jacksonville trying to find me a vegan pizza for the finish. Like, that's the kind of guys they were. They were giving me all the hell in the world. And then behind the scenes, they were doing everything they could to find a vegan pizza because they knew that I was vegan and the pizza that they had wasn't going to work for me. So that I was blown away at that.
So I wanted to get into that because, I mean, this is your first kind of dive into the whole GORUCK community and all of, you know, all the events and all this kind of stuff, the GORUCK cadre. The selection events, you know, they're definitely aggressive in how they deal with the candidates and, you know, they have the persona they put on. But then when we're watching the live feed at home, they have the videos of them being pretty aggressive towards the candidates, but then they also step back and they talk to each other and they say what they're doing and why they're doing it and they explain things. And you realize that they are actually, you know, humans and they have the interests of the candidates at heart and of the event. And so I'm curious if you watched any of the live feed video after you finished it, or if you were kind of shocked, you know, interacting with the cadre at the end of the event compared to during the event.
So I was in the military for 10 years, and part of that was a pre-ranger instructor, and I get what they're doing and why they're doing it. They're not trying to prepare you like we were in the military. They're trying to evaluate you. They are setting a standard, and it's mirrored after Special Forces selection. And the idea is, I knew, you know, I was stationed at Fort Bragg, which is the headquarters for special operations in the U.S. Army. If you went through Special Forces selection, you went through Fort Bragg. That's where the Q course is for Special Forces. That's where everything is. That's the center of their universe is Fort Bragg. So you kind of, after 8 years at Fort Bragg, you kind of know, you hear the stories, you think about going. So I understood what selection was and what it meant. And these cadre all went through it. So they understood what the purpose of selection was. And they're trying to give civilians a taste of that. And I knew right from the start, it's not personal. This is them mirroring selection to try to get you to question yourself, to see how bad you really want to be there, what you're willing to sacrifice to be Special Forces. They try to put you through the absolute physical and mental ringer. And it's not because they don't like you. It's because they're holding themselves to a high standard. Because if you go through and they pass you, you're going to be on a Special Forces team with other Special Forces soldiers. And if you get through them, you have other people's lives in your hands. So it's a very serious position to have in the military, is to be cadre for Special Forces selection. And I know that going in. So it didn't surprise me at all that these are some of the most professional and highly trained cadre that I've ever had the experience of training with. This is a job for them. It's not, this is nothing personal. They take it that serious. But at the end of the day, it's a job. And they did amazing, outstanding, in my opinion, for maintaining that level of professionalism and yet still evaluating all of us along the way and putting us through an absolute ringer. They're like actors almost. You have to appreciate that they can turn it on and off.
Yeah, yeah. They really can turn it on and off. And I mean, interacting with them at non-selection events is way different than interacting with them at selection events. So it's always interesting to see the cadre out there because they're people personally, and other people who are probably listening to stuff, hung out with at events, hung out with afterwards. And then you see them out there just grinding candidates. And it's definitely a unique experience to watch. The only way for candidates to meet a standard is for them to hold the standard. And they do a good job doing that.
Yeah.
You mentioned when you got there, you had an idea of what the event was going to be. And then you quickly realized that it wasn't what you thought it was going to be.
Oh yeah.
I'm curious what you thought GORUCK selection was going to be like. Like, how did you think the event was going to go, and what was your idea of it before you got there?
I thought it was going to mirror my experience in like Army Ranger School, in that there was more structure. I mean, it was very structured, but I mean, for example, we finished the PT test and I'm standing in shorts and t-shirt and my trail shoes, and they say, stand by your ruck and drink water. And I do exactly that. And I start looking around and people are changing into their pants and changing, putting sleeves on and gloves on. And I'm like, oh, y'all gonna get in some trouble. Yeah, they didn't say to do that. And then the welcome party started. And I was like, what happened to the 12-mile ruck march? What's going on here? And we crawled down that beach and there's blood on my knees and elbows. And I'm like, how did these guys just change into pants without, they just said drink water. So I'm trying to follow these rules. And I'm like, ooh, all right. So I guess these guys got one over on me. And then throughout the event, people were just kind of, they were doing what they had to do to progress. Like when it was time to do something in their mind, they were finishing and it was like, tear their ruck out, change their socks real fast before we started. It wasn't like I was waiting for Kadra to give me a clear direction. And it took me about 8 hours to figure out it's not coming. There's no direction coming. You're here to make it happen. If you need to do something, then you need to win an event and get it done. If you need to go use the bathroom, you need to you need to get some kind of priority of work done. You better bust your butt and be the first person done on one of these iterations so you have time to do it. So at like midnight the first night, I got through lunging and it was like, all right, I see how this 48 hours is going to go, and sprinted to a finish, threw my shoes off, pants on, boots on, changed socks, shirt, arm sleeves. And by the time we moved on, I was like, all right, I'm good to go. I get it. I get how this goes. And that was a big one for me where it was like, I just didn't understand that as I was going to do exactly what they said, exactly when they said it. And that was a mistake on my part where I thought I had a plan and I was going to stick to it, but my plan was bad. And because I was sticking to a bad plan, I'm not going to last much longer if I don't put pants on and I don't like start making this happen. So that was, if I would have waited any longer, I don't think my knees and legs would have held up. But that was just the first thing that the way I packed my rucksack, the way I put a hip belt on my rucksack to support the weight. I put Nalgene bottles on my hip belt. Like thought I was so smart and didn't realize that we were going to be rolling with our rucksack on and my Nalgenes would be digging in my side and I couldn't get them back in the pouch once I took them out. I had little pockets for everything in my ruck when I packed it, but they made us dump it and then pack it and dump it and pack it and dump it and pack it. I just went into it thinking it was going to be all physical and it was much more stress-based than I had anticipated. But my whole plan was the physical, dominate the physical side of it, and you can handle everything else. Just win everything, and you'll be able to get through the stress parts. And I wish I would have kind of met in the middle and dealt with the stress parts a little better than just flying into this thing to dominate physically. That was probably the biggest misconception I had.
Yeah, it's quite the mental game. Or at least it appears to be, talking to people who have finished the event and taking part in the event. And so I was kind of curious, since you went into this not knowing much about GORUCK selection based off of, you know, the research you had done about the event, but you didn't know too much about the history of the event or all of that, because you, like you said, you were surprised that some people had been there. There was their third attempt. It was their fourth attempt. And so things like that can compound mentally, because you've got this kind of barrier built up. You're like, man, I've tried this two times already and it hasn't worked out. Like, here we go again. I'm curious if you feel like that might have been an advantage almost, that you didn't know that there had been people who had tried multiple times, or the pass rate was, you know, so dang low, or something like that.
For me personally, I don't think so. I wanted to be there. Like, I understand performance dropping. I just don't understand the quitting side of it, the surrendering side of it. I get how you can fail a part of it and be like, okay, I need to train better. But I don't know about going 3 and 4 times and going through that and making this one the one where you're mentally prepared. Like, I feel like I can't understand going back a second. If you didn't make it the first time, going back a second time and being like, now I'm mentally tougher. It's tough for me. I just don't get it. I don't understand. But I could see how if you didn't train muscular endurance going into there and saying, I physically cannot go anymore, and being like, you know what, next year I'm doing this, I'm doing it right. I made a mistake. My training was wrong, but next year I'm going to do it right. And I think there was a lot of that. And that I think that's what happened to the other two finishers, 4-2 and 0-8, that they were, their training was, I mean, those are, they're beasts, they're studs, but it's like, it's just a different kind of animal.
Yeah.
You kind of have to like, they kind of trial and error their training to a point where it's like, this time they were physically in a place that allowed them mentally to stay in that place, where if you're not there physically, like, you know, spending all your time ruck marching is not the answer. And running, it's not the answer, because it's a lot more than that. And it just seemed like the majority came into it with training plans that involved ruck marching and running. And they're like, we'll just make the rest happen. And I just don't think that it will allow you mentally to keep going.
Right. And I haven't talked to Patrick yet, but I have talked to Mark, and he said that his previous attempts, that he hadn't, you know, put selection as his A race for the year, that he was doing other things that were big, and that he just kind of showed up to selection to see if he could do it. And it wasn't until this year when he actually took it seriously and said, you know, this is my A event for the year. I'm actually going to train for selection the way you're supposed to train for selection. And this is the year he did it.
Yeah, he's stud. Yeah, Patrick, funny enough, Patrick works for Spartan Race, and he passed through Dallas last weekend and swung by my gym, and we went and got a bite to eat and got to know him a little better. So that was, I feel like I just saw him, and all of a sudden he's back in Dallas, because that's where there was a race. But
that's rad.
He's in Houston, so I'm sure I'll be seeing him a little more now that I'm going to start getting into the events a little more often now. I'm looking forward to getting to know both the guys a little better.
Yeah, absolutely. So that was going to lead into, you know, one of my next questions, but let's go there now. Now that you've done your first GORUCK event, which was GORUCK Selection, I was going to ask if you had plans for any future ones. It sounds like team assessment is on the mind. You've already registered for that. Is there anything else that you're looking forward to or potentially doing?
I don't know. We're going to win team assessment in June for sure. I would love to do some of the star course. Like, I look at the Normandy star course, and I would love to go over to Europe and do a star course there, especially being in the military and the 82nd Airborne. You hear about, you know, Bastogne Forest, you hear about all these battles, and I would absolutely be thrilled to go do the 50-mile star course and traverse through that hallowed ground that I heard so much about when I was in the service. That is definitely at the top of my list. So that's first and foremost. I'm gonna make that happen sooner rather than later.
And if you're interested in the star course, just brand new for this, not really this year, next year, we're still in 2019, but for 2020, GORUCK's putting on the, what's it, Rucking World Championship, which has, you know, prize money and all that stuff. Basically a giant star course out in DC. So that might catch your eye.
Oh, first time hearing about any of this stuff, but that sounds right up my alley. I'm loving that. So that's another one. I would love to do that stuff.
I'll send you some info on it. But yeah, it's going to be a big thing.
Oh, fantastic.
So going back to selection for a minute, I mean, it was, like you said, the event was a little bit different than what you were expecting. I'm wondering if there were any points during it that really surprised you, really shocked you, or, you know, you were really excited about. Just kind of, you know, when you look back at the event, points that come to mind.
Oh, yeah. Right off the bat, the low crawl through that concrete culvert with a nice layer of black mud, the first real thing we did, I was like, oh my goodness, this is pretty bad. This is borderline cruel and unusual. That was one of the low points. Thank goodness there wasn't more of concrete crawling. But right then in shorts, I was like, ah, golly. I guess it's going to be a long 48 hours. And it mellowed out a bit after that. That was pretty bad for sure. Did not see that coming. Fast forward a little bit. The long walk through the tropical storm, that was miserable. Everything about that was terrible. The long walk, you dread the long walk just because of you're running on empty and, you know, you're hallucinating. Like, you know it's going to be bad. And you pile on top of that ice cold rain blowing sideways. Yeah, that was real tough. And again, I started that, didn't put my rain jacket on like an idiot, and suffered through the first 10 miles of that with in a short sleeve t-shirt and was like, I got it. This is just dumb. I am just an idiot. I was excited to do Murph. I would have been more excited not to do three additional rounds. I feel like I, looking back, I would have loved to get in a foot race with 4-2. I would have absolutely loved that, but I had three extra rounds. So that kind of, Kadri didn't know it yet, but that one hurt me mentally because I really, really wanted to win Murph. And they cut me deep when they gave me three extra rounds for having the small pocket of my rucksack unsecured. And they pulled a plastic bag out of it and gave me three rounds. That really, mentally, I didn't show it, but that one hurt. I really wanted to win Murph. So that was tough. The CrossFit workout during the long walk would have been a lot of fun if my feet weren't blistered. Trying to jump rope and coming off the pull-up bar, landing on that hardwood lifting platform really jarred my feet. I didn't recover after that. I felt that every step of the way until we finished. Tried not to show it, but man, that was really bad. My feet were just a hamburger meat, and trying to do jump roping and jumping off that pull-up bar was really tough. Real happy that workout ended and it wasn't 30 minutes. But there was no point that really blew me away or shocked me. Those were the low points. I loved the events, the sandbags. I mean, that's no surprise. I loved the throwing that sandbag and dragging things and carrying buckets, all the strongman training. Like, that was like rest. That was amazing. It was almost fun, the challenge of trying to carry the buckets and not splash out the water, but move as fast as you can. Like, that was a hoot. I love that.
I love the attitude on all that. And I mean, it looked like when you got to the CrossFit gym that you were pretty excited. You got to go inside for a second.
Yeah, it was getting there. They really knew how to get me. Their favorite catchphrase, pays to be a winner. That was my whole, I came into it to be a winner, to win everything. And every time they said it, they were just like, I just bit their lure. And they said that when we set off in the long walk, and I just chewed up the sand and got to that CrossFit, surprise, got to the CrossFit gym. But I got there and I was like, what, why does it pay to be a winner right now? There's no, they got me again. It did not pay to be a winner. I was just really tired. My feet really hurt from pushing so fast. And I got there and just stood there like, golly, I did it again. I need to be smarter about what I'm trying to win and what I'm not trying to win. But yeah, I was excited to see a CrossFit gym. As you can imagine, it's a huge part of my life, and I absolutely love it. So seeing it was like, kind of like a warm blanket. Like, I don't know what they're going to have us do, but I'm going to be comfortable at it, whatever it is, as opposed to pulling up to like a Pilates studio and have to be like, ugh, I've done this once or twice, but I'm not comfortable at it. So it was definitely something that I was like, I don't know what it is, but I'm ready for it no matter what. So let's just keep moving forward.
Yeah, it pays to be a winner. One's tough because, like you said, sometimes it really does pay to be a winner and sometimes it doesn't. And I mean, if you had not won the ruck to the CrossFit box, then I mean, you know how that stuff usually goes. Like, the one time you don't win is the time that matters. Who knows, the winner probably then would not have had to do the workout. They just get to sit and watch and refit.
Yeah.
It's the...
Get a foot massage from Jason, like, or, you know, something great like that.
Yep. That's at least how it always works for me. It's, you know, the times you win are the times that it's like, all right, you know, high five, you're all doing the same thing again. And the times you lose are the times when the winner actually gets something halfway decent, relatively speaking.
Yeah, they got me early on. Like, one of the first events we did, like the first night with the sandbags and the tiki torches, the two that won got to sit out the next one or sit out the first round of the next iteration. And I was like, as soon as I saw that, I was in my head, I'm like, you guys are in my seat right now. Like, I am not missing out on any rest. And from then on, it was like, yep, bear crawl, crab walk, sandbag, sprints. Like, no way. I'm not missing out. And I think that it did well. Even when I didn't, there was no reward. The rest was all I needed because of my I trained that way where CrossFit workouts, but doing, you know, 5 minutes sprint, 2 minutes rest for 10 rounds. So work hard, rest, get your heart rate back down. Your body starts working and processing and replenishing glycogen and replenishing your energy. And you train it to do that way. it would have been harder for me to just constantly move and come in last and then start something right away. I wouldn't have been ready to push, but the training that we did and that we designed really just set me up to win events and then rest and recover and start the next one at 100%. And over 9 months of training, your body just kind of adjusts to that style and nope, no big deal, no problem.
One of my favorite ways to train is interval training. And I feel like if you don't do interval training, then you don't really know how that quick sprint and then how to manage the recovery process works. And so it sounds like you did a lot of interval training, you know, both with the runnings you did. You said you were doing some interval sprint, you know, mile runs. And then it sounds like some of your workouts were interval training too, so you could practice at high intensity and then how to properly cool your body over 2 minutes and what to do and then ramp up again. So it sounds like that worked out pretty well for you.
Oh, could not have been better. Like the training that we designed, I'm not changing a thing. I got my partner and we're going to start applying some like synchro work, doing things, running together in cadence, in step, carrying things together. But that's just more sport specific training. And I'm just going to swap out my individual SST for that. So nothing's changing very much. Just kind of adjusting to bring in someone else in and include the teamwork aspect. But yeah, I felt amazing going in and I feel recovered after. Like I didn't really take much of a break. My knee's feeling better. But I think the training and diet are just feel absolutely bulletproof at this point.
So I'm pretty sure the listeners are going to hunt me down and kill me if I don't ask this question, because it sounds like you've developed, you know, quite the training plan that worked really well for you. Do you have plans to market this in the future or sell it or do some GoWork Selection-esque training cycle setup for people who, you know, are interested?
That's a really good question. And it's something that my wife and I have talked about. It's something that I have done for the members of the gym. I've never put it out there. We had a division of D-Town CrossFit called Ironworks, and that's exactly what it was. It was CrossFit competitor athlete training programs. And it runs really well. People that want to fill in holes in their game and prepare themselves for certain competitions, sanctioned events, will outsource their programming. And it's something that we're very comfortable doing. I'm trying to wrap my mind around GoRuck and rucking in general, as far as, you know, what would training be like? I've got the blueprint for a selection that I feel confident in, but there's a lot of other ones where the majority of the GoRuck athletes are doing heavies and double heavies and like the other events that I don't have a lot of experience in. So I'd be interested. I'm going to get into those and see about programming and training plans for the individual events at different tiers of intensity. I do know that the selection one, I will absolutely roll something out, especially with my new training for team assessment coming up. I'm going to post some workouts and some exercises that I've used for selection for people to be able to kind of give a try and to include. And templates and coaching is something that I absolutely want to offer because it's something that we do for CrossFit, but this is hitting an entirely different population of people that are no less deserve to be at the top of their athletic game than a CrossFit athlete. You know, CrossFit athlete, I say CrossFit athletes, I'm talking about the real estate agents and financial advisors and teachers and bartenders, and that's our CrossFit. Everyone's an athlete. So it's not that we're programming for elite level athletes. We're programming for anyone that wants to be better. And you can see it in the GoRuck community and just the rucking community where everyone, you start doing it and then you want to go faster and you want to do more and you want to do this event and this, you don't want to head out to these events and then not finish and not succeed. Everyone has this drive to just be better. And it's something that we hang our hat on, making everyone better that wants to be better. So I gotta say that I can't wait to see where it takes us. The selection one is a no brainer because we worked really hard on my training and it paid off. And I wanted to be able to offer that and make people, I'd love for selection 2.0 to come out and it has 13 finishers and 9 of them are following our training plans because they didn't know what to do without it. That would be an absolute dream to change people's lives for the better and have a hand in it. So oh my gosh, that would be and just an absolute dream come true.
I love it. And I love the attitude behind it. I love the ideas. And I think that's, I mean, that's so cool. And I agree, you know, with GORUCK's other events, the non-selection, they're all team-based. And so a lot of the drive behind people wanting to be better is that when you're on a team, you don't want to be the burden, right? You don't want to be the person's slowing the team down, the person who can't carry the log, the person who can't, you know, who feels like they're not pulling their own weight. So there's this extra drive because, you know, disappointing yourself really, really sucks. But when you've disappointed yourself and your perceived burden on 20 other people, like that can take you to a new low. So the drive for improvement there is, it's really interesting and it's kind of unique to those type of GORUCK events.
And you're absolutely right. It can have the absolute reverse effect of why you set out. Now you've alienated yourself from other people. You've been a burden, so you feel bad. They're mad at you. It'll stop you from being social. It'll stop you from signing up for new events. Like, that's not the purpose. The purpose is to get out there and to be great. The purpose is to win everything and to be a productive member of a team, to be with like-minded people. And it can stop that right in its tracks if you go into it and have such a negative experience where you leave there saying, I never want to feel like that again. It can be good. It can drive you to be better, but it can also drive you to be worse and just avoid it.
Absolutely.
Sadly to say, it's that the majority of the time, most people are programmed just to avoid pain. If you were one of the people that automatically wants to be better, you 9 times out of 10, you're probably not signing up for something you're not prepared for. So it's a tough thing where that can be in this world, someone who went from being so unfit and unhealthy and, you know, just spiraling downhill to being at the level that I'm at now, like, it breaks my heart to see someone that goes the other way when they want to be better, but they just don't have a starting point. They don't have an idea of how to do it. So, I mean, that's why we have, my wife and I have built a CrossFit gym and put so much effort into it as a second and third business. My goodness, we'd have so much more free time and to progress our careers without the gym. But I couldn't imagine living a day without our gym and without our community and members. I just couldn't, oh my God, I couldn't live with myself.
And I think one of the things in that whole, you know, process that's nice about the GORUCK community, the GRT community, is that everyone is, for the most part, nice. And so if you're the person at the event who's not achieving, it's not like everyone else is saying, you suck, you know, why are you here? They're all offering, you know, give us your ruck, give us your whatever, you know, let me carry your plate for you so you can take a couple minutes, catch your breath and figure it out. But at the same time, you know, having people offer to do that can be defeating mentally because you're like, you look around, everyone else is doing this and they're going to take my stuff too. Like, what is going on?
Yeah.
And so at least the community is nice about it, but I completely agree that, you know, when you leave events like that after experiencing it, I mean, it can be tough to reconcile mentally. So having the proper training is important. And then the second thing I was going to mention was, you know, when I was growing up, I wasn't really, I don't want to say I was necessarily too overweight, but I mean, my mile times were terrible. I ran a 13-minute mile in high school. Like, that was my PR, right?
Yeah. That's moving.
Yeah, it's, you know, I mean, that's, I think I can walk that at this point, 13-minute mile. It's, you know, it's awful. And right now I'm running, you know, under, if it's just a mile, under a 6, and it's just a world of difference going from being like the least in shape person I know to someone who's moderately in shape. And so
he's modest. You got a sub-6 mile and you call yourself moderately in shape. No, that's great.
I mean, so where you're coming from, you know, with your gym and everything you're talking about, just, it resonates deeply with me because, you know, I was at that point, and it was actually a Muay Thai gym that I joined that I ended up going to like 20 hours a week because I just loved it so much. But it was a gym that showed me that I could be in shape and an actual athlete and not just someone who's going to be running 13-minute miles for the rest of their life. So I love what you're doing, and thank you for all that you're doing. Even though I've never been to your gym, I really appreciate you and everything you're doing with it.
I appreciate that. It's always, if you start and you come, like my wife and I, we don't wake, I like to tell people that come in here, we don't wake up fit. Everything is a struggle for us and it never gets easy. And you just have to wrap your mind around, like, this is just, it's a lifestyle and we're trying to make that, make bridge that gap where people think that it's not a temporary, you're changing your whole lifestyle. And that's what we try to offer with these programs and with our training, with our diets and with our gym and our classes. And you get it because it's work for you. You've worked to get to a point, but it's also work to keep it. And when they come in the door and they talk to us, they're talking to people that had to work to get it and they have to work to keep it. Some people just wake up in the morning and they're just, bless their hearts, they're just fit. You know, everyone has those friends that just captain the football team, eats whatever they want, do whatever they want all the time. And it just seems like it comes so easy. But who wants to listen? I mean, there's a lot of good people out there that are like that, but the majority of the masses aren't that. So what does that person, what can they offer that they don't already know? You know, where it's like, yeah, you can have cheat days and you can do this and do that, just do what I do. Well, that's not true because you're a freak and, right. and you're giving bad advice. So I love when our members find out, you know, I don't walk around and, you know, carry photos of me in high school around in my wallet, but from time to time, like after I wrote my piece about why I went to selection, I had members come up to me and said, oh my God, it makes sense why you seem to understand about my nutrition and my training and how I feel during things because you went through it. I'm like, yeah, I'm trying to tell you guys, but no one listens. Like it's work full time. It's full tilt full time. This is nothing that I don't know myself. I'm not asking you to do anything that I'm not prepared to do myself.
Absolutely. And I mean, just like you said, every day in some regards, I mean, the chip aisle is still a nightmare. You know, the candy aisle is still, just avoid at all costs.
Lying.
Yeah. Because
that is no lie. Stick to the outside of the supermarket. That's it.
Mm-hmm. Because I mean, if I go down there, I'll grab stuff. Just, it's like,
oh man, you know, what's the best part about being vegan is all my food is in one area. I don't even go down the chip aisle because it's all located in one little vegan area. So I don't have to go shopping around for it. They've done the shopping for me. I just walk to one area and grab all my stuff and walk right to the register. And it's really nice.
That's perfect. Makes it a little bit simpler. And so while we're on the topic of food for a second, what are your thoughts on peanut butter?
Peanut butter. Yeah, I'm a big fan. Big fan. you know, it's funny that, so I went from one extreme to the next where I told you that I was sitting there like not putting my pants, waiting to be told what to do. And it was never coming. And then I started winning events and they said, pays to be a winner. You get, you know, 5 minutes, priorities work, drink water, rest. And I was like, great. So I go over there and I feel terrible. I'm really lightheaded from like pushing real hard. And I'm like, I don't want to tell the medics that I'm, feeling lightheaded. They may drop me for being a heat casualty. So I'm going to try to regulate my blood sugar a little bit and house something with some calories in it while I'm changing my pants. And man, was that a mistake. Holy cow. I went right from no marks on my pack right to that red patch. And I was like, oh my God, I'm about to go home right now. And then for the rest of the whole 38 hours was like, I got to win everything or else they're going to pack me up and ship me out of here. I was dancing on razor blades for the whole darn event with that red patch, but I do love me some peanut butter.
And that's a tough one, right? I mean, especially when you're coming in from this, it's your first event and you haven't really seen that happen years past because stuff like that's happened in previous years, but you're coming into this, the cadres say, drink some water and everyone else is doing everything but drinking water. You know, they'll take a sip, but they're changing everything. Like, oh, like, do the rules not matter? Do they matter? And then you broke the one rule that really matters. And
oh man,
it's like, wait, why does this rule matter so much more than all those other rules? I can see.
Yeah, it's I took one on the chin there, and I kind of go back to training in the military and land nav courses, and they're like, if you walk on the roads, you'll be dropped during your land nav course. And you get 30 feet from the start point, and everyone's like, let me get on the, just run down the road. Everyone's running down the roads, trying to get as close to their points as they can and stopping and doing this. And it's just, you do what your rank can afford, I guess. If you don't do it, you may fail. So it's like, is it worth doing it? And you're at the point where you just kind of got to make, I'm looking around at everybody else and I'm like, these guys are doing what has to be done so that they succeed. I got it now. I understand what this event is. And I probably would have been fine if I didn't smell like peanut butter, but it was one of those calculated risks that, you know, did not pan out the way I was hoping for.
And Jason talked about that too in the live feed, actually. I don't know if you went back and saw that, but he brought up that same thing. He said when they were doing land nav, you know, you get like one infraction. And so he's like, you bet everyone's taking the road every chance they get. And then they get caught and they're like, oh, all right, no more road for this land nav event. And, you know, he mentioned that you paid the price and that it was, you know, it was all equal from then on out, that he wasn't holding it over against you. So I thought that was, you know, pretty interesting that you brought that up now too.
Now I've been meaning to go back and watch. I've seen a couple of the live. I went back and watched my when I got hit with that wave and went down with my knee, but I haven't seen much of the other live feed. But I've been meaning to go back and watch that. It's like watching a horror movie that you're starring in. Not all that exciting to go back and watch it.
Yeah, Mark described it as a nightmare. The end of it.
Yeah. Oh. Probably the worst part of the worst I felt during the entire time was the last man up runs after the long walk. I don't know if that was live streamed or not, but for the last, like, had to be 2 miles, they had us doing, the three of us doing last man up runs all the way to the pier. And if I had food in my stomach, it would have come up. We're all running on absolute empty, and three man last man up runs are cruel and unusual. That is, by the time you stop, you touch the cadre's pack, you're already in the back again, and you have to run to the front. And it doesn't seem like a lot, but you're never not, like, sprinting. Oh, it was absolute. And then the welcome, the finish started, and it was like, this, yeah, they knew what they were doing there. That was real tough. That was definitely, training did not prepare me for that one specific feeling, because that was really bad.
Yeah, that's just a combination of everything leading up to it too, right? Because, you know, last man up runs when you're fresh, they're not that bad. They're actually kind of fun.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
that level of, you know, lack of sleep, everything you've done before that, you know, no real food, nutrition, except for a little bit here and there. And, you know, the combination of everything, your feet probably just made that a nightmare.
Oh yeah, that was not a pleasant couple of miles, that's for sure.
So when the event wrapped up, I mean, how did you feel when it was over? Were you excited? What was your first thoughts when you realized the event was done and you were done?
I was really happy to see my wife. She was there waiting for me at the finish, and she was a sight for sore eyes. You could tell that, well, I figured out fast that everyone kind of knew each other, and I was the outsider for sure. Patrick and Mark definitely had a lot of friends there, and it was great. I'm so happy for them that they finally knocked that out. But they definitely, I just wanted to be with my wife, really. I wasn't really in the mood to meet a bunch. In hindsight, I wish I could go back. And we actually left at 6 a.m. the next morning. That was our flight home. I've got two little girls and I just want to get home. I wish I would have waited till like noon, because waking up for that flight was not easy. But as soon as it finished, I was just really happy to see my wife, Alexis, and she ripped my boots off and got me all cleaned up. And she was more of a mess than I was. She was just beside herself, just could not wait for it to be over. And I was just really happy to be able to see her and spend time with her. And it was, I wish I could go back and spend more time with the cadre and get to meet the people that put it on and spend more time with Mark and Patrick. You never get to talk during the event, so I didn't even know them at all. I wish I would have met the other finishers and heard their story, but we just got the hell out of there. We did that interview right afterwards and went straight for vegan pizza, and I just went to sleep. But I was just super happy to be with my family.
Yeah, it's always like such a good feeling after an event. I mean, I haven't done GORC selection, but even the smaller events, the 12 hours, the 24 hour events. I have a 2-year-old and a 5-year-old and then my wife. And, you know, it's so nice getting home and seeing your kids and your family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. For the 9 months leading up to it, your training is like a part of the family. You know, it's like everything I'm juggling. I was going on my ruck marches at 8 o'clock at night after I put the girls to bed and getting back at midnight or 1 o'clock and then getting up for work. So it's like, it's just a part of your life. And then when I saw my wife, Alexis, afterwards, it was like I was seeing her for the first time because we didn't have my training and my diet and this thing hanging over our head. And it was over and I did it. And we did it because she picked up all the slack for me during heavy, high volume, high intensity training days where she never complained about it. She told me this family doesn't do participation medals and to either get the patch or don't come home. And she knows exactly what to say to me. And, you know, seeing her afterwards was, it's like we did it together. So it was just the best. She is my everything for sure.
That's just an awesome shout out because, I mean, especially when you have kids, it's so important that your spouse is on board just for the, you know, everything, the mental aspects, because when you go to these bigger events, you want the event to be the focus, not, I think my wife's, you know, upset with me for being here. And I think, you know, you need everything off the table and just to be focused on that. So sounds like she was just an amazing partner in this whole thing.
Oh my God. She's my queen. She's a warrior and she supports it. And she just, it's our family first in all things. And if we're going to do anything, we're going full tilt, full time. There's no half-ass in anything. And she's as fired up about all these events as I am, if not more. We want to set a good example for the girls and for our members to show them that it doesn't matter how busy you are, you know, there's no excuse not to get this stuff done. And she's an amazing woman and I owe it all to her.
Man. Well, I mean, I've had you on for so long already. I've been having such an awesome, you know, just an awesome time talking about this event. But I'm sure you've got, you know, the rest of your day to go. Is there anything about GoRec Selection, about the event, training for it, you know, post-event? It sounds like your knee's recovering nicely. We talked a little bit before this, you know, nothing major there, thank goodness. But is there anything else that we might have missed that you want to talk about?
You know, the gear, like the GoRec gear and the other events, you know, we touched on a little bit, but I think that was, if I could redo anything, I would have done one or two. Like I told you, I didn't spend a ton of time rucking. I didn't use their event. So I think that if I could, people have been reaching out to me asking about selection, about training for it, and about they're getting ready to do heavy and then a double heavy and then a triple heavy. And I'm not very good at the events yet. I'm getting there, but they're using the events to train. And I think using the events to refine is probably the best thing to do. They're using the events for training, but they shouldn't be doing it in lieu of training. Your training should take place in a structured environment and you should be using progressive overload and a program to train. And you should be using the events as refinement, as getting comfortable in that energy system training. But doing one event a week, I just feel like you're going into it and you're doing a disservice to yourself. And I went the opposite way where I didn't do any of them. And I paid dearly for that. And you felt the guys that came in and they were doing all the events, they paid dearly for that. But I feel like buy a couple of the GoRec sandbags and get a training program and get a ruck and get a system, a little gym set up where you can actually build some horsepower before and during your training. And I think that's something that, I think was going to help a lot of people just be better, maybe not pass selection, but just be a better athlete, achieve goals and just progress better. And that's probably the one thing that I took away from it, where there's a big hole in what people are doing for training and differentiate training from refinement and preparation. And I'm not going to make that mistake again.
I think that makes a lot of sense. And I mean, like you said, doing no events versus doing all the events, I think there's probably a good middle ground where you have all this focused training where, you know, you're trying to pinpoint weaknesses, trying to build up, trying to increase your strength, your endurance and all of that. And then you can maybe use a couple of GORUCK events as reflection points, because I know when I finish up GORUCK events, I'll come back and I'll think, man, I was really bad at overhead holds. I didn't even realize that.
Yeah.
That I was sucking at overhead holds until we were out there and you have to do a 2-minute overhead hold or else everyone else has to do it again. It's like, oh, you know, I need to focus on that. And then you do all of your, you know, your training trying to fill in the gap. And so that's when I'm trying to train up for bigger things, that's how I use the GORUCK events as little, you know, a looking glass or a magnifier into, you know, whatever I need to possibly work on. But I don't use them as training because I've got all the other training established to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's where when you asked about training templates and programs, and I want to offer it. And I think that it'll just make people healthier, where you go into and you do a heavy and you realize, oh my goodness, my overhead hold is bad. Well, guess what? Great. Because that's what you're working on for the next couple of months until the next heavy. Do all the events you were doing, but those are your rucking practice. And when you're not doing the events, you're not out there just rucking and running. You're getting better. You're setting goals for your overhead holds and for your max rep back squat and for your, you know, 1 mile walking lunge time or, you know, whatever it is that kind of stops you from falling into the rules of accommodation in the CrossFit world, they call it, where it becomes less stressful on your body. So your body stops progressing. So varying up your training is how you stop your body from just accommodating to the stress you've been applying and plateauing. And that's probably but it works that way with your preparation too, where if you do 85 GORUCK events and all you do is pack and unpack your rucksack, you're only going to get so good at it. But all the time you spent practicing it could have been spent doing something else, refining your diet or training your overhead hold. So I'm going to be smarter about it next time.
I love to hear the words next time because, I mean, you did awesome out there and it sounds like you've got a lot of events, you know, in your future coming up too. I'm really excited to see what you come up with, what you come out with, and, you know, how you do it, everything.
You and me both, because it's kind of evolving as we go here. The whole GORUCK, I can't even tell you enough how when I finished, the first thing my wife said to me was, you're not going to believe how big this thing is. And I was like, what are you talking about? Like, I just finished it. Like, it's done. She was like, it's not done. Everyone you've ever met has been watching. People are buying rucksacks. People, like, it's been 48 hours and you've basically got a rucking team at the gym who is all in, committed. Like, the whole world has been watching you. And I'm like, you're kidding. I just did this for a workout. Like, I just set a goal. Like, what do you mean? She's like, it's huge. And I'm like, oh my goodness. And she was not lying. I got home and the response has just been amazing.
I'm so glad to hear it. I'm glad that you had a great response coming back. And that is awesome. So I guess my final question on that is, you know, you kind of didn't realize how big this whole thing was before you came in. Obviously, there was a lot of cameras, a lot of everything at the event. Did all those cameras kind of get in the way at all? Do you feel like of the event? And I mean, not physically in the way, but it's got to be kind of mentally taxing to have someone there with the live feed camera going, some photographers, you know, taking pictures of you all the time and another team taking video of you. Was it mentally taxing at all?
No, not in the least. Didn't even notice. Didn't care.
Perfect.
It was task at hand. Whatever the task was, like,
put the blinders on.
They were just another, yeah. What are we doing? Throwing sandbags for 7 miles? Let's do it. Let's go. Are we starting? Can we go now? Flipping tires? All right. Next. What's up? Done. Next. 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 What's next? Next man up. Like, just one after the other. Stop thinking about what you just did or what you're going to do and just whatever they're telling you to do right now, like, task at hand. So didn't bother me. Didn't even notice it. I think they did a fantastic job. I only noticed it one time during the long walk, and they were running around with like battery powered LED floodlights. And I was like, what am I hallucinating? Like, what is this right now? And then they came out with one picture of me walking with a white light behind me. And I'm like, that's probably the coolest picture of me I've ever seen. And, I remember that one time where there was two guys, it was the same two photographers. I mean, the pictures are amazing. They're some of the most talented guys I've ever seen. They're just fantastic. And they worked their butts off. And that one moment during the long walk where they were running around blinding me with white light, I was like, what are we doing right now? Are we stopping? Is that it? Is this it? Is it over? And then I saw that picture and I was like, man, these guys are working their butts off. So no, I did not bother me in the least.
Yeah. The photography crew with GORUCK is awesome. And actually I've interviewed one of the photographers that was down there and talking about the event, because I've had cadre on the podcast to talk about the event. I've had finishers on, but I thought it would be interesting to talk to someone who was kind of there as an outsider, just kind of documenting it, because I'd imagine that the energy mm-hmm. level and just everything going on is way different than what people are used to.
Was it Tim Galloway?
Yes.
He and I have been kind of like chatting offline, texting back and forth. So I've really enjoyed getting to talk to Tim. He's got one photo of me throwing a sandbag, and it looks like a world-class golf swing. And it's probably my favorite photo from the event, because it's like hips open. Like, I was like, man, I really had that rugby toss just down pat. Like, that is just a fantastic sandbag toss. And we had a pretty good laugh, because it looks like I just cranked a 400-yard drive and you see the sandbag like 6 feet in front of me.
That's what everyone was saying, that you picked up the sandbag, threw it 10 feet, and they picked it up and threw it a foot and a half. And like, all right, that's how it's going to be. You got a great throw out there.
You know, it was time not spent rucking, and I trained my run to pass the 5 mile, and everything else was spent doing CrossFit, you know, wall balls and chest tosses and sandbag throws and thrusters and box jumps and broad jumps and hip drive and sumo deadlifts and all the other accessory movements that build hip drive and hip power. You hit a certain point and the sandbag just doesn't feel heavy, and you press it with your legs and not your arms, and it just kind of goes. But I'm going into it in training to kind of achieve that goal of, I'm going to have to flip some tires and carry rocks and do this crazy stuff. Well, training my 12-mile ruck march and my 5-mile run is not going to prepare my body for carrying logs and shoulder to overhead and, you know, all those crazy movements. So congratulations, you passed the PT test and the 12-mile run, but what now? You're just starting. So I liked seeing that one photo where I'm using my hips and hamstrings to kind of launch that sandbag and not my arms and back. And I was like, yep, I felt really good about, just because I wasn't trying to. It's just that was how we trained it at the gym. And it just kind of muscle memory took over and the sandbag just kind of went.
I'll have to hit you up and try and grab that picture. Maybe we can use it as the cover art to this episode, because it sounds like it's quite the image.
You know, it's probably less inspiring for everyone else, but for me, it kind of, so CrossFit, we're at my gym, it's form and function before everything else, before intensity. So seeing that after 30 something hours and all those sandbag tosses, that's one of my last sandbag tosses, and my chest is up and my hips are open and I'm driving through my glutes. It felt good for me. So someone else would look at it and say, haha, it looks like a golf swing. But for me, it was like, yes, my form never gave up. Like, the training, that's the goal, is that your first rep is equal to your last rep and it never breaks down, because that's when injuries happen. So seeing it for me was very impactful, that, oh man, wasn't even thinking about it and my hips are open and this is exactly how, this was my plan. And seeing this sneaky photo he took without me even knowing it was like, that's how I was doing all of them. And it just, for me, it felt really good, because that was my whole goal and purpose for structuring training, was that after 48 hours, my air squat and my shoulder to overhead, my sandbag hold looks the same as it did at hour one. So that the photo, again, it does not, it's not that great, but for me, it kind of validated what I was setting out to do.
That makes a lot of sense. And I'm sure it's still a great photo, but
I'll send it to you and then we'll see what you think.
There we go.
You know, I'm no pro golfer, but you're going to look at it and go, oh, you know what? It's actually not that great.
Man. Well, I appreciate you bringing all that up. If you end up, you know, producing some training material, I'd love to have you back on and we can talk about that and just see everything you've got going on, because it sounds like it was a, I mean, obviously it was a valuable resource for you, right? You passed selection. So I can imagine it would be a valuable resource to everyone else as well.
Yeah. I'd like to think so. I like to think that I didn't, you know, I passed selection, but I can't tell you how I felt so good at the end of it that I'm like, you know, I'm onto something here because this training really prepared me. I didn't just finish it. Like, I felt as good as Mark did. And we're talking about a high level endurance athlete who's done a ton of these things. And I just kind of walked in off the street and just kind of did what I programmed to do. So I think that you don't have to be a world-class endurance athlete if you train smart. So that's kind of what I'm hoping to accomplish and to provide people.
Perfect. And who doesn't want to train smart, right?
Yeah. Train smart, smart and hard.
It's the two key ingredients right there. Alex, thank you so much again for taking all this time out of your day for being on this call with me. You know, obviously you're new to the community, so you're might not have, you know, even known about the podcast when I reached out. So I really appreciate you taking a chance on this one and having this call with me.
Oh man, it was absolute pleasure. Any chance I get, I mean, my wife thanks you because I'll probably, usually I'm talking to her about nutrition and training and she gets tired of it. So if I can talk to somebody else who can lighten her load, she appreciates it a ton. Just an absolute pleasure to be able to talk to you about it.
Thank you so much for listening to the All Day Rock Off podcast. This has been episode number 128. Truly appreciate the support. And again, Alex, thank you for being on. Had a lot of fun talking, and I'm sure you'll be back again to talk about your new training plans and RockingFit.com. If you want links again to anything we talked about during the episode, alldayrockoff.com/128 will take you to the show notes page. It's got all the links there. And if you enjoyed this episode and you want to support the podcast, you can do that for free by leaving reviews on Facebook. Just search for All Day Rock Off, or on Apple Podcasts. You can search for All Day Rock Off over there. If you want to support the podcast financially, you can purchase items at the All Day Rock Off online store, alldayrockoff.com/store. There's patches, apparel, hats, a lot of rucking gear, water bladders, gloves, all that good stuff. And then finally, you can support through Patreon, patreon.com/alldayrockoff. And if you support that way, you get a couple extra bonuses as well. Again, I really hope that you enjoyed this episode. Alex was really fun to talk to, and I hope this inspires and motivates some people to, you know, get ready for GoArc Team Assessment, because that's the next huge event on the calendar. Thank you so much for downloading this episode. I can't wait to talk to you next week. And as always, don't forget, attitude is everything. Keep yours positive and drink hard, rock harder.